This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate Gee. I've created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk analyze and explain the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many, many more. A new episode comes out every other Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you'd like to call in and leave a voicemail question or comment to be read on the show, the U.S. number is 714-900-2601. Or send it in through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. All right, good evening, everybody. It's Nate G here, along with Dr. Jen Hawk and Dr. Doug Lyle with the Beat Your Genes podcast. Dr. Hawk, Dr. Lyle, how are you both doing this evening?
Good.
Great. How's it going with you?
We're doing great. We got some pretty deep, some long questions today, so we're going to just hit the ground running and try to tackle as many as we possibly can. Dr. Hawk, welcome back. We missed you.
I can't get you guys to do small talk. I can't get you to do small talk, no matter how. I keep trying.
Yep.
It's like we're just straight down to business. It's like, God, where's the foreplay? Come on. Yeah. this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep, that's it, Nathan. It feels right to me.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Dear doctors.
patriarchy.
All right. Dear doctors.
Don't be afraid. Just because there's an irritated female on the other end out there. You just got to press forward in life, Nathan. That's what you do.
I'm in a mood. Okay?
Our saving grace is that we're on the phone. She's not in front of me. She can't throw a newspaper at me. She can't slap me.
That's true.
All right. Let's see what we got.
All right. Okay. Fine.
All right.
All right, Nathan. Let it roll.
Dear doctors.
Quick, before we start processing our feelings. We don't want to do that.
I feel personally
process feelings on a psychology podcast.
I feel personally attacked.
Oh boy.
All right, Jen, Dr. Hawk, may we begin, Dr. Hawk?
Yeah, if you guys think we're ready, let's just go ahead.
I don't know. I feel kind of ready. Dr. Lyle, how do you feel?
I think it's lubricated enough.
Okay.
Oh, God. All right. We've now officially jumped the shark.
All right.
Well, which is it?
Just get it over with.
Yeah, that's a couple minutes of small talk. Can we get right into it now?
My relationships are not only few in number, but short in duration.
All right, everybody, that's the show. We're getting banned from all of our platforms. This is where we'll be canceled within the next 24 hours.
How about we blame cancel culture? Let's do that.
Yeah,
I think that's
right.
Absolutely.
That's why we're trying to not express feelings.
Perfectly.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Nathan, let's see what we got.
Dear doctors, I struggle with something rather common, but I'd still would like to hear your take on it from an evolutionary standpoint. I'm a 26-year-old female and in a 2-year relationship with a guy, let's call him Luke. Luke is a medical doctor, works at the hospital. He's rather smart. Looks-wise, he's pretty average, but neither overweight nor has a funky smell. He's a nice guy, will provide for me and the family as soon as we have kids, which is already on our agenda. He respects my wishes to a large extent and eats only plant-based at home, though he used to eat meat on the regular. He is caring, always there for me, even when I'm going a bit crazy. Sounds perfect, right? Well, when I was 20, I met a guy, let's call him Dave, and we became best friends. After a year or so, we had a short phase where we had sex. For him, out of convenience, for me, also, because I was crushing very hard on him, which led to quite some trouble, and our friendship wasn't the same ever since. We did hear each other every couple of months, but we never got that close again. He also moved to another country close by. I really fell for him, though, and all through the years, I was never able to let go of him. He appeared in my dreams, so on and so forth. He's the same age as I am and my partner, but restarted college again in the new country he is in now. He's in no position to provide while I want to be a stay-at-home mom. Also, he's not into me. He never was, and I don't think he ever will be. We totally vibe, but I don't think we would fit together as a couple. And I don't know why I can't get this guy out of my head. He still makes me shaky after 5 years and a lot of misbehavior on his side. Luke on the other side is nice, but I never really crushed on him once. It was all a rational choice. So please tell me, how can I let go of this feeling for Dave? I just don't get it. My mind is totally on board with planning my future life with Luke and having a family and kids soon, but still there's always this nagging voice and this nagging feeling reminding me of Dave. I also thought about him while I was having sex with Luke, and I feel really bad about it. How do I move on? I just want to be happy and feel like this is standing in my way.
Well, this is actually a great question, and I appreciate the person's, honesty in asking it. And I understand there's a quiet, deep, and profound urgency to this question. So I'll give my take on it, and then Jen will come back and correct me or give a woman's perspective, et cetera, and just shine her light from her own view. But I feel pretty strongly about this. So, this is a, let me sort of explain a little bit of something about the human, sort of how the emotion system works. So the way the emotion system works is that if you can imagine a line segment, a horizontal line segment, and on the far right of it, we're going to put acute excitement. And on the far left of it, we're going to put acute dread and misery. And right down the middle is neutral. And what this is what I call the continuum of value. And so what your mind does is your mind's actually a super complicated parallel processing computer that takes in information from many sources. One of them is certainly your sensory data is what comes in through five senses. It then computes, it matches up what it is that it's seeing and smelling and tasting and hearing and feeling. It matches those up against the data that resides in the genetic code for estimating the biological value of those sensory inputs. So when you take a bit of fruit that looks a little odd and it's shiny, and you find out, that in a textbook that it actually has a name, so you actually know that it's a fruit, and the textbook says it's not poisonous. What will happen is you bite into it a little bit, you'll have, your sensory system will be estimating the biological value of that. You'll be careful about it because it's novel. But you'll compute it. And, if it tastes kind of sour, doesn't taste very good, then you won't be very excited about it. If it tastes exquisitely positive, you'll have a very different reaction. So the reactions you have run the gamut from the dread of feeling like you're trapped, under the water with suddenly but three sharks are triangulating on you, okay? On the other hand, the other thing is that you're some guy and you went up to this girl in your history class at the U who's smoking hot and you're pretty decent looking and you actually, manage after class to walk with her and chat with her a little bit, and then you ask her out, she says yes. Okay, that's pretty damn excited. So this is the continuum of value. And these values are computed, all of them, down through the genetic code that requires sensory data, and then it also requires memory systems to help modify your understanding. So if it turns out that you just heard that there's a 75% sale off at Macy's on sweaters and you've been looking for them, like that's not in the genetic code to know what Macy's is or 75% off is, but you can compute it against what is in fact in the genetic code, which is the understanding of value and trade and what that all means, etc. You can compute that. Now, so what I'm getting at is that the what you feel is the result of very complicated computations. And if there's one thing that is a pretty bizarre thing to be doing in this day and age, if you are a competent human, if you're a competent enough human to be judged by a 26-year-old medical doctor to be wife material, then I am assuming that you can chew gum and walk and support yourself and not be a beggar with a bowl in your hand trying to figure out how on earth you're going to survive. At which point the question to me comes, what on earth are we doing contemplating a relationship that feels this flat? Now, that's from my personal perspective, because my personal perspective would say, wouldn't we be attempting to find a stimulus that is hitting the nervous system and telling it that it's actually quite happy, and that stimulus is causing pretty solid, reliable, high moods of happiness? If that's not happening at 26 before you had kids, then my crystal ball tells me that if you get married and have a couple of kids with this guy, you could just, you know, kiss off any sexuality interest that you're going to have for the rest of your life with this guy. Now, that's my guess, but that guess, it probably, if we computed correlation coefficients on similar women under similar circumstances over time, I probably got 80% of the variance predicting it my way. The in terms of the dingbat that you have a crush on that you still think about, well, one of the reasons is that you haven't got anybody in front of you that is an excitement competitor. And so as a result, your nervous system is circling around, realizing, wait a second, there was a moment in time when it felt that excitement of high biological value in a mating situation. Now, that mating situation is ludicrous. You got a little ding chip in your head because somehow the way this thing ended, it didn't end with enough drama and enough clean, clear, you know, absolute rejection in your face enough to, the guy was friendly enough about it somehow. He got out of Dodge without you wanting to kill him. Okay? But bottom line is you don't qualify, and that's that. You never will. So as you speculate, it's interesting that you actually don't realize that as you talk about how you, quote, vibe well together, but you would want to be a stay-at-home mom and he blah, blah. It's like, Jesus, you're fantasizing about a guy who has like zero interest in you. Okay, so that's interesting. So we got a little chip in your head. We got a hanging chad on your ballot that you're not like getting it clear. But I think one of the reasons that you may be circulating around this is because you're in a situation that you know, although this guy is a very good guy and there's nothing, quote, objectionable about it. My dad used to have a phrase about things. He would say, there's nothing wrong with it, but there's nothing right with it either. And this sounds like a relationship that's a flat coke. And so if we're trying to figure out why you can't let go of Dave, it's because Luke isn't exciting enough for you to let go of Dave. And your nervous system is whispering to you across the millennia, across the 100,000 years, a million. Your female ancestors that go back to the dawn of pair bonding are telling you, pretty big freaking sacrifice for resources, chief. It's too high. Okay. So pretty much every woman, maybe not everyone, but close, has the opportunity to trade sufficiently down in terms of her sexual interest in order to get more resources. We call it, quote, settling. Okay. Now, there's a time and a place to settle, probably. Like, I don't know, you got rheumatoid arthritis, you're 58 years old, you haven't saved any money. You know what I mean? You're on your own. I don't know what else you got. You got an adult daughter who's a special needs child that you're still taking care of. And it turns out there's a friendly old bachelor who's 72 who takes a shine to you. Now, he's not sexually functional, but he'd sure like to hang with you and he'd actually like to marry you, and you have no interest in the guy at all. And he kind of smells, but what the hell? He's got a lot of money and he's generous and he's pleasant. Okay, we'll think about that. 26? Wow. Okay, wow. Now, to be fair, we're seeing life from my perspective, okay? I think my sort of feeling about life and my feeling about romantic passion and my feeling about relationship management, I actually think is pretty average for the species. Maybe I'm overly romantic and I'm a lot more romantic than I think I am, but I don't think so. Okay? So your decision and what this sounds like, it could be that you, on the other hand, may be remarkably tame. And if you are, and this sounds and feels like a pretty good deal, but somehow maybe you're going to let go of Dave one day after you have a couple of kids and they're looking up at you and you realize this is your life, maybe you're going to be fine. Okay? But if you're flat about this and you're flat about the sexuality and you really don't find this guy appealing, you know, I don't know. We'd have to assess, you know, inside your head, and you have to look at this. But don't get into something because you're being sort of swept into it and you are addicted to the status that comes with the fact that you'd be marrying a doctor. I had a supervisor in grad school who, you know, obviously became a PhD in clinical psychology, and she was a nice looking woman, and she was in her 40s and finally got married, and she was Jewish, and her mother was this old Jewish, tough Jewish gal from New York with a New York accent. And when she got her doctorate, her mother said, "Oh, honey, you're a doctor. That's almost as good as marrying one." Okay. So, yeah, it's almost as good as marrying one. Well, you can marry one if you want. And maybe that's a little midget Nobel Prize that's got some shine in your eye. But careful. Be very careful. Be careful with this man's feelings. Does he deserve to spend his life with somebody who feels like he's a flat coke? That he doesn't, quote, smell too bad. Okay? So that's my dire warning here is careful. You're designed as a passionate organism. Obviously, you've had a weak knees delta fiasco with this guy before, but that's still, I see that instead of more of an open loop that you can't close, I see it as a warning about your current circumstances. I could be wrong. So Jen, give us your take. Tell me what you think. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think this is much less to do with weak knees delta, this Dave character, and much more to do with the estimation of your current circumstances and the fiance and how he qualifies. So I think Doug is mostly completely on the right track there. I do think two things. One, you know, you're asking how you can kind of get over these feelings and close the loop. Nothing closes the loop as effectively, if the loop can be closed, with the one who got away in this kind of context, because, you know, most people have kind of a one who got away scenario, a weak knees delta story very similar to this. So nothing will close that loop more rapidly and effectively than you know, going and seeing him in person and recognizing that he probably doesn't qualify anymore. So I have certainly been in that position. I know a lot of people who have. They kind of have this built up narrative, an idea of this past torrid relationship that they had. And 10 years later, they go meet the guy for coffee and realize there's no there. And this all just exists in their head. And it's, you know, it was this very exciting fantasy, but there's that absolutely closes the loop in a second. Of course, it might not, you know, might open the gates of hell and you might recognize that he does still qualify and that that's still a problem. But either way, it's really good information. So if there is a way to connect with him, you know, it might work to kind of Zoom chat with him. You mentioned he's in a different country, so this might be logistically fraught with all kinds of peril. But I have definitely kind of been circling around whether a blast from the past qualifies. And when you see them in person and kind of remember the reality of the situation, that will close the loop in a hurry for you a lot of the time. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. The other is that, you know, this is all, you know, I think Doug probably is fairly typical for the species, but that doesn't mean that you are. So, right. You know, this is all about your personality and your risk tolerance. So if you kind of picked Luke out of the lineup and you made this quote unquote very rational decision process to want to pair bond with him, and you're planning for a certain number of kids by a certain age, you know, you're feeling the pressure of that timeline and there's a certain agenda that you have for your life, and you're not particularly motivated by great romance, great passion, great excitement in this kind of way. And if your risk tolerance is really low, because of course that's always the trade. Like you can give up this potentially, you know, somewhat mediocre trade that you're making, at least mediocre in some ways, on the off chance, not likely with the guy from the past, but the off chance that there is another great romantic love and great passionate situation out there for you that can kind of hit all the pair bond circuits in addition to all of the sexually exciting circuits. It's certainly possible. It does happen, but there is a risk that that would never happen. So there's a risk that, you know, you give up the sure thing and you sort of cruise through the wilderness for some amount of time and you miss your window for this life that you wanted to create for yourself. And so you're not able to have the kids that you wanted. You're you have that situation where you feel regret for letting go of the stable thing to chase the excitement of the potential butterflies with someone else. So this is really just a personal, this is about who you are and what you value and what kinds of trade-offs you're willing to make and what kind of risk you're willing to tolerate. But I think we can definitely agree that this has very little to do with the dude from the past. It's, I think he is a proxy for your uncertainty about your current relationship, and whether we dispatch him with a meeting in person or somehow close that loop in another way, he will, like a game of whack-a-mole, the specter of Dave from the past will rise again when you're, you know, 10 years into this marriage and you meet a guy at work, or your brother has a friend that he introduces you to, and you start to have these kinds of same thoughts that you have about Dave. But in this context, you're thinking about stepping out of your marriage. So the Dave problem is really just he's just a placeholder for this the uneven CB that you have on the pair bond and the sort of defection probability that you're going to have for the entire ride, most likely. So it's a tough decision. It requires a lot of intense self-reflection on your part.
Yeah, fabulous, Jen. I had somehow I'd been intimidated by the idea that the guy was in a foreign country. But I bet, thank God, you know, that's why we work as a team, because, if he was in Kansas, I'd say, go see him. Okay. So yeah. I had quietly been pushed around by that logistical issue. But I would completely agree, by the way. I want to vote my concurrence. I think a 15 year cognitive dissonant crazy situation with a young lady that, she had, I told her, go to Florida. She was in California. Go to Florida. Go track this guy down. She knew he was married and he had a couple of kids. She did it anyway, had lunch, and it was done. It was a fine, warm, beautiful meeting. But 15 years of dreaming and scheming and not being able to be invested in any other relationship – went up in smoke and the loop was closed at the, you know, within 20 minutes into a lunch. So super, just exactly what you're talking about, Jen, that the reality versus the construction and memory was two entirely different things.
Yeah, you basically, the female nervous system is going to admire him much more in retrospect than you are if you're face to face with him. And I have watched many friends go through this situation. I have personally experienced it more than once, where you're sort of like got a massive open loop, you're completely hung up. And you know, often, especially when there's distance involved and the kind of you're having this, you know, semi emotional affair is going on where, you know, you're having these furtive little conversations in the middle of the night. I had one guy who I was totally the one who got away for him, and he was only messaging me at, like, he's living on the East Coast, and I would get these, you know, it became a pattern that I would start to get these texts at like 3 a.m. East Coast time. Mm-hmm. And it was on like Friday night, and it was when he came home and he had a few glasses of wine, and that was when he started messaging me and feeling like, oh yeah, I gotta start this up again. And I didn't have the full picture, so that's a very enticing, you're sort of like, oh, I'm getting all these really positive signals, what's going on? And then, you know, you actually meet the guy for coffee or for lunch and you realize, oh, you're just a schmo stuck in an office job, you know, like having a hard time in your own marriage, and I'm a little flirtatious outlet for you. I'm not an actual possibility. So that it shuts all that distortion down in a second to see what you're really dealing with. So if that's possible, highly recommended.
Here you go. Great.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Dr. Hawk, Dr. Lyle, thank you.
All right, Nathan. Well, all boy, right. That's an emotional big one. Let's see what else we got tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's well, tough. It's really, that's a big one. It's like brings up the principle that there's no easy answers.
Yeah.
You know, like she's likely to feel regret either way. So yeah. there's, you know, and unless we have door number three, which is that she, you know, leaves this engagement and, you know, pretty quickly finds the love of her life that hits all of the right circuits. So that's possible. That possibility exists, but there's some probability associated with it. And then there's also some probability associated with the other options. And so there's a relatively high risk that, okay, if you stay in the mediocre marriage, you're going to regret never having gone out and looked for something better. And if you go out and look for something better and never find it, you're going to regret that you didn't stay with the stable guy. So you have to like courageously embrace those probabilities of risk on either side and assess them really honestly with yourself to figure out what path to walk, recognizing that either way that you go, there is a potential chance that you lose it all. So it's not, there's no pat easy answer to that.
Mm-hmm. It's your 26.
At 26, yeah.
26. Yeah. You know, I'd have a lot. I'd be talking a lot tamer if you were 37.
That's very true. I wanted to come back to a really important point that you made, though, which is that it's also about Luke. So let's not forget about Luke and his you know, life happiness and what he deserves in his pair bond. It's easy to kind of get wrapped up with your own CBs and what's best for me. But the question of is, does he deserve someone who's not all in? It's one thing for you to kind of feel like this is the best option for you, and maybe he's agreeable and he's, you know, he's kind of going to go along with it and he's on board and he's over rewarded and so everything's fine. But is that really fair to him? Is that something that you want to be responsible for? If you know that it's not everything that you want, are you willing to basically steal his time and his opportunities in that way? That's a really important part of this moral calculation.
That is huge. I have to tell you, I just went through this process with a fabulous long-term client. And this lady has been booking a long time, and she's in her deep in her 30s, and she's, you know, ambivalent about children, but ambivalent meaning is truly ambivalent, doesn't know if she wants to or doesn't want to, and has never had the right situation, and has had a relationship here in the last year of someone who is a superb provider, And this has actually been a real issue. This individual, by virtue of their life history and risks that they've taken and sort of their sort of interesting and creative career, has not had a lot of financial stability in her life and didn't have it in her childhood. And so she doesn't feel that secure in that arena, although she's a capable human. And so as a result, this was a very enticing set of circumstances. And so I got, you know, sort of quiet SOS call, very barely tapping on the keys on the SOS was, you know, that's what's Morse code. Like really calling me, almost distracting me with some other little issues, but really it was an SOS. Okay. And we're longtime good friends for many years. And as I'm listening, and I'm hearing what a wonderful human this is, but what about, you know, what do I think about this? And I'm like, tell me more about what you mean. Okay. And so this is, you know, there's, now we're digging here, and I'm hoping to give our 26-year-old lady a little flashlight to look inside of her head, which is exactly what you just, what you're pushing me and us to do, Jen. And that is, I really want to know about the sexual chemistry, its duration, in other words, its duration in the relationship, and what it feels like now, and how the whole thing feels like, in terms of just how cozy and friendly and warm and sensual and connected, and how complete you feel like, you know, this is good. This is my person. I'm willing to stand by this person, and I'm super happy with them, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, let's face it. This is a tall order. You're asking the nervous system to make a 50-year decision with a 5-year chip. But does it feel like it is? And in no time, by the way, it became quickly apparent that there was great cognitive dissonance and it was the wrong place to be. And within a week of the initial conversation, which believe me, there was no heavy duty pressure on my part at all. All I had to do was ask questions. It's just a little bit of crystal clear. Okay. And pretty soon it starts tumbling out. And then pretty soon it's the feeling of letting down the other person and how that they're going to be so upset and that, gosh, it's such a nice situation. And if I ever did want to have kids, this would be an unbelievably easy thing. And this guy treats me better than anybody that has ever treated me. I'm being treated like a queen. But at the same time, you know what I mean? There's this gnawing feeling. And if there's one thing that will help a person get clear, it's what Jen just mentioned, which is important. And that is this, you know, does this guy, are you essentially doing him a favor? Are you falling on your sword because it's so good for them and they're so happy and they're so proud, et cetera, and they're so glad to be with you? And yet you really don't, you're not feeling it in any big way at all. But you're a nice person, they're a nice person, they're a great provider, blah, blah, blah. Okay? Well, I have to tell you, the relief that was felt when she gritted her teeth and made the right decision was profound. It was, you know, kind of disturbing, you know, to do it and to grind it. And it was an upsetting conversation. And it was a tense couple 3 days. But at the end, it was like, you know what? Thank God. That is, I had a phrase for it that I came up with in our conversation. It was something like, that's like the most important conversation or the most important communication that ever happens. The most important communication that you will ever do, or the most difficult communication that you'll ever do, is when you have to face up to the fact that somebody that loves you and that you love as a human does not qualify. And you have to grit your teeth and pull away. And the truth is that you should be doing it just as much for them as you're doing it for you. They don't deserve it. They don't deserve to get fool's gold for their life achievement in the paravent, in the romance arena. Can you imagine just in principle, like in this situation? Let's everybody just put on our imagination hat. And let's imagine that this dynamic remains relatively constant. And let's suppose that this young lady is thinking, and in her mind, in her imagination, while she's having sex with her husband, every time she's thinking about this other guy. That's where her mind goes to maintain her excitement. That's what she's thinking. It's like, if you are the husband and you knew that that's what was going on inside your wife's head, is that where you would want to be? Okay. That doesn't seem square to me. So that seems like that is wouldn't bother me if a partner has some fantasy checkerboard that they run all over the place or whatever the heck it is that they do. But what we shouldn't have is we shouldn't have a complete disinterest in the partner, essentially, and our mind is focused on somebody that qualifies. That is my reaction to such a situation would be, whoa, don't do me any favors. Okay? Don't do me any favors. The only place I'm interested in being is a place where I qualify. And if I don't qualify, don't pretend that I qualify. Okay? In order, because it would be convenient. That's not square. That's not optimizing anybody's happiness. All right. So that's what I have to say about it. Does that sound about right, Jen?
Yeah. I don't think that's quite what's going on in the sense that she's, I don't think it is a question of Dave qualifying. I think she recognizes, at least within the context of this particular question. I mean, we're sort of dancing back and forth between the specifics of this question and the general principles, but this specific question, it seems clear to me that she's, you know, she recognizes that there's not a mutual qualification with Dave. He's just sort of like this lingering open loop. So that's part of the reason I'm focused on closing the loop. I think that, you know, if that's dominating your sexual fantasies that you know, are taking you out of the moment with Luke, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with having sort of escapist, you know, you're all over the place. I think the female nervous system is more prone to do that. But certainly in the case where if only I could be with my Prince Charming, who is not this guy, that's a different thing than just being sort of lost in a fantasy, whether it's with an old partner or somebody you have a crush on or whatever. I think there are degrees of difference there.
Yes.
But I think she's probably more in the this is just an escapist fantasy type camp, rather than I'm obsessing about somebody that I really would prefer to be with rather than the person I'm actually with. Certainly in that case, yeah, that would be really, 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 really bad news. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're giving this a lot of time because it's such a complex, you know, there's so much going on here. It matters, you know, there's so much rigorous self-interrogation required here, which is difficult to do at 26. It's difficult to do without a lot of life experience. And there's, because she's in the situation she's in, I also worry about, you know, leaving this situation and going out and trying her hand and getting really excited about what she thinks is some new pair bond and getting played for casual mating and basically, you know, getting the wishbone. Have you talked about the wishbone on the podcast before?
I don't think I have.
I'm issuing an invitation. But at 26, if she's, just thinking of her, like the fact that she knows she wants children, mm-hmm. you know, she's got to kind of get this figured out in the next 5 years or so, mm-hmm. Ideally. And if she spends a lot of time, if she does leave this relationship and then she gets caught up because she's chasing the excitement of mm-hmm. being, like, kind of by definition, if she finds herself really excited and really over rewarded by a new guy who's throwing a bunch of pair bond signals, he could keep her, he could, you know, know, steal a year or two from her, and she could find a row of those and pretty soon wake up and she's 32, 33 and hasn't had her first kid yet. So that is, you know, a very plausible scenario for somebody in this situation who's kind of chasing passion rather than stability. So I just, I'm just to complicate the situation even further, I want to be aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That one's a, that one, I have a suspicion, and we're taking a tremendous amount of time with this because this is actually one of the great dilemmas of human life. So of the great dilemmas of human life, this is in the top 10. So it makes sense for Jen and I to look at this from all angles. And I think we are coming down on slightly different angles on this. And this is just has to do with who it is that we are and our own life experiences and just and male versus female and everything else under the sun. The it actually takes me back to a conversation when Harry met Sally, when they're arguing about sexuality and passion or something like this, and they're just friends, and they're in the shop, and Harry's like rolling his eyes and basically says, you know, that's because you haven't had good sex or whatever. And she says, no, it's because women are more practical about these things. And Harry's like, yeah. And then, so he kind of insults her that she hasn't ever had good sex. And then she does the famous fake orgasm scene in the middle of the restaurant. You know, it's the most priceless. Then Rob Reiner gave his mother the best line in the movie, which is, I'll have what she's having. You know, so that's the...
Oh, I didn't know that was Rob Reiner's
mother. Yeah, it was Rob Reiner's mother. He specially gave that line to her. So the... but that's where we're seeing, and you can see slightly different angles, and that's why, you know, this is I of course it had to be Shakespeare, you know, to thy own self be true, and that is this is the self reflection that's involved here. How much do you really like this guy? Do you find this guy personally attractive, irrelevant of his attractiveness to the world? And in other words, how does this feel being in this relationship? If you're happy, if you have sexual fantasy, but you are, you know, with some other guy for a while, that's a loose screw in your head. But in fact, the relationship has been solid and sensual and has attraction as its ether. Then all of that is fine, and then that's a different thing. This feels like it might be an SOS to me. And it feels like it might be asking for somebody to ask the hard questions and to put it under the hot halogen lamp and say, wait a minute, what the hell are you doing? You're engaged. What is this about? Okay. And to be careful about, let's not get swept up in the pseudo esteem of, quote, marrying a doctor. Careful. Okay, let's not have a mediocre, conflicted existence in this area when we're 26 years old and you got plenty of time to go for a gold medal. Okay, so that's what this conversation's about. So look, we look at it from all angles, but at the end of the day, it's looking yourself in the mirror and thinking hard, what am I doing? Okay, am I doing this for the right reasons, and does this really feel right? That's what we need to figure out.
I've been doing this podcast now for almost 5 years. And, you know, over the years, a number of men have written to me with this exact scenario, but from the male's perspective, is they got into evolutionary psychology because they fear that this might happen, or maybe it did happen to them, and they're like a few years out of a divorce with a couple of kids, you know, and the wife ended up confessing. And so I think before when we started the podcast, there was not very much evolutionary psychology, you know, for mainstream consumption. It was mostly from the casual mating perspective of males. But I know that a lot of our listeners were, you know, were not geared towards that. They were actually trying to figure out how to avoid this certain type of situation. So really appreciate Dr. Hawk, your perspective, and Dr. Lyle, your perspective. you know, for males, is this guy Luke, is he missing something? Is he just kind of willfully ignorant, or do you think is he just too enamored with a high over rewarding situation?
That's a beautiful question. Beautiful question. Who knows? And she knows, because she knows whether or not she's authentically responsive to this guy and therefore giving him authentic, enthusiastic signals. And therefore, i.e. whether or not we've got a love dynamic. Okay. And so, if she's bluffing him and it's actually pretty lukewarm, i.e. no pun intended. And the truth of the matter is,
gold star for that pun.
Yeah. totally by accident. I don't have that chip in my head. You make an interesting point, Nathan, and that is that we don't know what that circumstance is, and for all we know, he could be in a little bit of a situation where if he's over rewarded and he can kind of sniff mm-hmm. this, he's figuring on just with these sort of the chick excitement of quote marriage, you know what I mean, which is a chick motive vastly more than a male motive, that that if he can sort of ride a tide of the excitement of marrying the doctor and all of what that entails for her life, that maybe he gets to win a game that he isn't really authentically winning, and he could be going, you know, willfully unconscious of that fact and essentially hope that the accoutrements and children that are involved in that process wind up essentially putting a moat around that female, and he gets to win sexier DNA than he actually won in fair competition. So that could absolutely be going on. And so that's a great question.
Well, I think a lot of marriages are going to be founded in that sort of mutual mm-hmm. pseudo esteem deception, you know. Mm-hmm. So she's caught up with the pseudo esteem of his status in the world, and he's caught up with the pseudo esteem of her attractiveness, and becomes the kind of becomes the context of like what sustains that dynamic, and it's not. It's not the life that either Doug or I would recommend or choose for ourselves. It's sort of like what are you really valuing? What are you really like when you really sit down, like the pseudo esteem test is really sitting and, you know, asking yourself, you know, if I were stuck on a desert island, would I want to be with this person? Like if I had a month left to live, would I want to spend those days with that person just sitting and talking and connecting with each other? Like, is that who I really want to be with or not? Rather than, you know, what is the outside world thinking of them? How is my status in the village going up because she's on my arm, or because, you know, I get to say that I'm married to this high status position. So, and it's, I don't think it would be unusual at all for both parties to be somewhat or largely motivated by pseudo esteem, but it's something to be vigilant against. And again, to kind of contrast against your own nature and your own actual priorities, just to make sure that you're not falling into a trap. If it's a trap that you want to live in because mm-hmm. it complements your life goals and you don't care about the things that it prevents you from experiencing as much as other people would, then it's fine. Like it can be a benign mm-hmm. trap. If it's sort of, you know, you're in a real housewife kind of situation and it's all good. But if that's not aligned with who you want to be and the kind of life that you want to have and the kind of relationship that you want to have, then it's time for some really hard thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And perhaps this may...
Nobody. Yeah. There's nobody like Jen Hawk.
Oh,
I've never heard anybody in my life talk like Jen Hawk. I've just never heard anybody like it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you for the thanks for the esteem shout out. I appreciate that. Just making up for the intro. These are my flowers.
Yeah. No.
All right, Nathan, well, I think that's enough.
Yeah, I think it's a great segue to for listeners who want to hear more of Dr. Hawk. Jen, you have a little program now with the Moments of Zen with Jen. Is that right? So that's on, people can find that on jenhawk.com.
Yeah, it's called, I changed the title to make it, you know, sort of more, just more general title. So it's called The Virtual Village, as in the kind of virtual Stone Age village. So yeah, it's kind of a group thing, a group coaching slash weekly Q&A, just community discussion that happens. That, yeah, it's a monthly thing. So if people want to sign up for a month at a time, they can find that on my website.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah.
And for people who want to hear more of Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk together, esteemdynamics.com is just a wonderful website with a really reasonable either monthly price or lifetime price. And the lifetime sign up includes your upcoming books. So go check out esteemdynamics.com, you guys. And I know I'm a member there, and I've watched a lot of the videos. They're really, really, really in-depth, and they kind of cover the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. Dr. Lyle.
Yeah, cool. That's where we do on the weeks that the podcast is when the podcast is a repeat, that means that we're doing a live members-only Q&A over on our website. So if you want to hear more of us making asses of ourselves on the airwaves, then you can, that's a way to access something that's only for our members over there on off weeks.
Well said.
Well, so Dr. Lyle, Dr. Hawk, just all right, quickly
Nathan.
To our, okay.
Yeah, we got something else?
No, just quickly to the point is it, I'm just kind of realizing why it's so unproductive to bring up any sorts of evolutionary psychology or anything like that with people who are not already there, because you're threatening their entire existence, essentially. And exposing some of that potential feelings that maybe they don't want anybody else to realize on the other end.
Oh, totally. I mean, if you're making choices rooted in pseudo esteem, you don't want a spotlight shown on that process at all. Like that's very troubling, both to your own understanding of what you're up to and to the kind of artifice and facade that you've built around the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, there's a reason that this is politically incorrect content, and people are not always willing to hear it and to apply it to their own choices in their own lives.
Wonderful.
All good.
Well, Dr. Hawk, Dr. Lyle, thank you so much for this really in-depth answer. Really appreciate it. And we will look forward to hearing your answers to the rest of the questions our next show.
Very good, Nathan.
Yeah, we might get through two next time.
There, you got it. All good.
All right. I'll see you guys next time.
Right. Thanks, everybody. All right. Thank you, Nathan.
Thanks for listening.
Gotcha.
If you like what you hear, subscribe. Write us a review or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G., Dr. Lyle, and Dr. Hawk with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.